On an episode of the Joe Rogan Experience, Dr. Peter McCullough, a cardiologist in training, came on to discuss his treatment initiative that was designed to treat COVID-19 in patients. In his appearance, Dr. McCullough made several claims that have had the scientific community in disbelief in the amount of disinformation and conspiracy theories that went unchallenged. On today's episode, we're going to look at some of the claims that were made during this podcast, and more importantly, assess the engagement between Dr. McCullough and Joe Rogan. I am your social chemist, Nelson, and today, we dive into the conspiratorial mindset of Dr. Peter McCullough. If you're listening on Spotify, click on that follow button for me. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, click on that subscribe button and leave me a 5-star review. By doing so, you help expose this podcast to people who might be interested in conspiracy theories within politics. You can follow me on Facebook and Instagram at The Social Chemist. If possible, share this podcast with your friends to have some interesting discussions about today's episode. And of course, for this episode, you can find all the references on the show notes below. Happy 2022, my social chemists. I hope everyone listening had an amazing break and is excited for what this year brings. Unfortunately for me, 2022 started with a minor setback as I actually tested positive for COVID-19, or as the conspiracy theorists like to call it, I tested positive for 5G. So I've been required to stay home and rest, but on the bright side, it's given me some time to work on this episode, which I thought I wasn't going to be able to do so. There's always, you know, the positive on that. So today we're going to look at the interview between Joe Rogan and Dr. Peter McCullough. First, we're going to look at each person's credentials. I think in doing so, it's going to illustrate one of the elements of conspiratorial distribution that conspiracy theory producers rely on when talking to anyone about their beliefs. Let's start with Dr. Peter McCullough. Now, in the podcast episode, he introduces himself as the lead researcher in cardiology and as a renowned expert in his field. However, after listening to the episode for a second time, he states that he is a cardiologist in training, and that threw me off because if he's a cardiologist in training, that informs me that he's not a certified expert in the discipline that he claims to be in. Like, imagine me, a social worker in training, giving you mental health services as if I were a professional. There is a reason why I'm in training. I'm still learning. Now, outside of cardiology, Dr. Peter McCullough is not an immunologist or a virologist. And this is important because throughout his discussion with Joe Rogan, he's going to make a number of claims that are just straight up false and go against the scientific consensus about COVID-19. Now we look at Joe Rogan, and to be honest, I don't think I need to introduce him to you. If you listen to podcasts, you've most certainly have heard of Joe Rogan, but in the chance that you haven't, Joe Rogan is like the dark hole in the center of our galaxy. When it comes to podcasting, he's the most popular podcaster in the world, garnishing over millions of downloads. He is also a commentator for the UFC. He's a former Taekwondo martial artist, one of the most successful stand-up comedians of our generation. And most importantly, he was the host of one of my favorite shows growing up, Fear Factor. Now, in spite of all his accolades, Joe Rogan is not a doctor, nor is he a scientist. Joe Rogan, just like his average listener, are regular people that like to flirt with conspiratorial ideologies. Now, in Joe Rogan's defense, he has openly admitted to being a conspiracy theorist and a self-proclaimed idiot, which, listen, I have to respect the self-acknowledgement. Any person willing to accept their intellectual limitation has my respect. Unfortunately, that hasn't stopped him from becoming the biggest conspiracy theory distributor on the internet. So much so that conspiracy theorists like Riza Islam, known for conspiracy theories about depopulation and the gay agenda to womenize the African American man, have begun making videos to have his followers convince Joe to bring him onto his podcast. If he actually makes it onto his podcast, that's going to be a very interesting episode. So what makes Joe Rogan so popular? Well, for one, as mentioned before, his fame from Fear Factor has been a massive contribution to his popularity. The second thing is the people Joe Rogan has access to. Now, unlike me, I can't get the likes of Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, or Robert Downey Jr. to come to my podcast. On the other hand, Joe Rogan literally has people begging to come to his podcast because they know that the whole world's going to be listening. And lastly, his conversation style is so much better than what is given on mainstream media. Anytime you ever watch an interview on CNN or Fox News, the time frame is so small and the segments are so structured that they offer little time to expand on ideas. For this reason, many listen to Joe Rogan because he allows his guests to express freely without a time frame, sometimes engaging with people for up to 3 hours, and his discussions with people are fascinating regardless of the topic. For example, one of my favorite Joe Rogan episodes is when he had Jacques Vail, I believe. It's like a French person. I can't pronounce their name properly. And James Fox. And they spent 3 hours talking about UFOs and the 1994 alien visitation in Zimbabwe. And I recall listening to that episode and just being in awe in what his guests had to say. I'll leave a link to that episode if you're interested in aliens. But it's those conversations that really capture the audience of Joe Rogan. And it's because of it that he's gained so much success in the realm of podcasting. Unfortunately, Joe Rogan's curiosity often leads him to assume all opinions must be presented as equal, and this is where the problems begin. Now, as mentioned earlier, Joe Rogan is neither a scientist or a doctor, and it's because of this disadvantage that conspiratorial ideologies blossom in his program. Joe Rogan often invites scientists that have been censored in order to present the other side of the story. The issue with this is that the experts that he invites either are not really experts in the field that they claim to be, like Dr. Peter McCullough, or they're what we call contrarians, which are people that oppose the scientific consensus just because. Now, since Joe Rogan is not an expert in vaccines or an immunologist, in this episode, he is unable to differentiate between what is factual and what's conspiratorial. And if you listen to the episode, unless you have sufficient knowledge on vaccines from an academic standpoint, you will also find yourself facing a similar problem. And that's because, just like Joe Rogan, the average listener here is not a medical expert. And this is what I mean when I say that conspiracy theorists often rely on the lack of knowledge among their audience. Let me give you an example. Imagine the maintenance light of your vehicle turned on, and other than knowing how to drive your car, you had no knowledge of mechanics. You then take your vehicle to a mechanic, and then a person who works at the mechanic says the problem with the vehicle is that the transmission is broken. Now, at the time of the person telling you this, how do you know that they're not bullshitting you? Well, as a non-professional, you really have no other choice but then to believe the person simply because they work at the mechanic, right? However, what if then a few minutes later, the owner of the facility and a mechanic comes along and states that the issue with your vehicle is that you just need an oil change? Now there's a dilemma, because there are two conflicting views. One that is saying that the issue is the transmission, and the other saying that it's the oil. Well, what do you do now? Notice how the first person never identifies their position, other than that they work there. What is the position of the first person you came in contact with? Well, after talking for a few minutes, you realize that the person you're talking to isn't a mechanic, but works in the wheels department, switching old tires for new ones. This is essentially what Dr. Peter McCullough has been doing throughout his misinformation campaign, overestimating his knowledge of cardiovascular issues to assert that he has sufficient knowledge to talk about vaccines and immunization, even though his studies never touch on those topics. In psychology, we refer to this type of behavior as the Dunning-Kruger effect. Now, the first 30 minutes of the podcast were interesting because Joe Rogan, in 5 or 6 different occasions, insists on asking why the government wasn't treating patients with ivermectin, which is the central talking point to Dr. Peter McCullough's conspiracy theory. Why are they silencing him? Why is the CDC pushing for mass vaccination and not eating healthy, a false premise that Joe Rogan keeps repeating? Why isn't the mainstream media talking about this? Why? 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 I found this interesting because Joe Rogan insisting on asking questions from a why framework illustrates that he is more interested in intentionality than functionality. In psychotherapy, we are taught to never ask clients questions starting out with why. This is because why often implies guilt, and we see this in everyday interaction. If you ever ask your friends, why do they do something? There's a good chance they'll respond with, I don't know. For example, why are you wearing the shoes that you're wearing today? Why did you eat cereal instead of waffles this morning? Most of the time, why asserts a certain degree of being in the wrong. This is why mental health counselors and psychotherapists prefer the usage of what, because what is neutral, and it allows for someone to explain the reasoning and functionality of events. So instead of asking, why did you wear those shoes, Daniel? I could ask, what made you wear those shoes? Because damn, Daniel. Shout out to anyone that giggled to that reference, by the way. A more clear illustration can be used when describing how rain functions. Imagine it's raining and I come out of nowhere saying, "Why is it raining?" Like if the weather was obligated to give me a response or is at fault for ruining my day. However, if I were to say, "What is making it rain?" I have allowed for an explanation to be offered without making an assertion about guilt. So when Joe Rogan asks why Dr. Peter McCullough has been discredited by the scientific consensus, he has already implied guilt among doctors and scientists that have discredited him and his false information. Now, initially, when Joe Rogan was asking Dr. Peter McCullough so many why questions, the doctor was able to respond to his questions in a pretty fair-minded way. I didn't get a sense of his conspiratorial mindset until 30 minutes had passed into the episode, and then a waterfall of misinformation started to pour down. In his explosion of disinformation, Dr. Peter McCullough made several claims, some including hospitals were withholding treating patients who had COVID-19, and that half of the 400,000 people that lost their lives in the first year of the pandemic could have been saved using ivermectin, that Bill Gates had been sponsoring Operation Depopulation, that people cannot get reinfected with COVID-19, and that once you develop natural immunity, you're immune for life, and that the scientific consensus of doctors and scientists that have been conducting research on vaccinations are all going through mass formulation psychosis. So let's start with the first claim about hospitals refusing to offer treatment to patients dying from COVID-19 during the first year of this pandemic. Notice that Dr. Peter McCullough is more concerned about treating patients than actually preventing a patient from suffering from the severe symptoms of the virus. It reminds me of the point I made on my last episode about preventing situations instead of reacting to it. When the first COVID-19 vaccines were approved by the FDA under emergency use authorization, the function of the vaccine was to prevent transmission of the virus. And I'm talking about the original strain. I'm not talking about the Delta or the Omicron. Those variants would eventually become the mutation of the original virus, which gave it the ability to transmit from one person to another, regardless of vaccination status. Now, early on during the pandemic, if you had gotten vaccinated and had been exposed to the virus, nothing would have happened to you. There was a 99% chance that you would have never known that you were infected with COVID-19, and in that, you would be able to enjoy life and not worry about a damn thing. On the other hand, if you were unvaccinated, you ran the risk of suffering from severe symptoms of COVID-19, getting hospitalized, and at worst, dying. Now, according to Dr. Peter McCullough, during the early days of the pandemic, hospitals would take in patients but not treat them for their symptoms. Simply, the doctors and nurses did nothing and let the patients die. Well, we actually know that statement's bullshit. Hospitals did treat their patients, and some of the treatments that were offered to patients include remdesivir, oxygen therapy, which is the ventilators, and other hard-to-pronounce medications. But point being is that treatments were provided to patients, and the fact that Dr. Peter McCullough states otherwise illustrates his insincerity on the matter. Now, according to Dr. Peter McCullough, he was the only motherfucker that was actually doing something about the pandemic. In his own words, he stated that the reason for this is because most scientists and doctors are nerds and aren't known for being courageous. And I think that statement kind of reveals the nature of Dr. Peter McCullough. In that moment, he spoke as if he were superior to them, not only in knowledge, but in moral values. It's as if by the end of this pandemic, he will somehow triumph over the medical establishment and be acknowledged for his so-called bravery. I don't know, when I heard that, it sounded a little, petty. Now, in his claim that hospitals, doctors, and scientists were not doing enough to treat patients during their hospital stay, Dr. Peter McCullough stated that he had found an effective treatment that was saving countless lives. The treatment that he is referring to is ivermectin. And for many conspiracy theorists, anti-vaxxers, and conservatives, this medication was the real cure to COVID-19. It was God's gift to man. What I find interesting about the acceptance of ivermectin among its followers is that when you think about it, it reveals the inconsistencies from conspiracy theorists. Take into consideration that one of the biggest antagonists for anti-vaxxers is Big Pharma. According to anti-vaxxers, Big Pharma and their products are filled with poison. For this reason, a naturalistic approach is often preferred, because everything in nature, by definition, is good. However, when it comes to ivermectin, all of a sudden these principles are thrown out the window. This is because ivermectin is a pharmaceutical product developed by Merck, and ironically, the developers and the FDA have both come out to inform its users that ivermectin is not meant to treat COVID-19. But this hasn't stopped anti-vaxxers and conservatives from obtaining prescriptions, as one of the justifications for its usage is that in 2015, ivermectin had won the Nobel Peace Prize Award, and so by default, this medication treats everything. The thing about that is that it didn't win a Nobel Peace Prize Award for treating COVID-19. It won the award for treating malaria, two different diseases. But as stated, this hasn't stopped the conspiratorially inclined, and as a matter of fact, has resulted in several individuals being sent to the hospital for overdosing on ivermectin. So there's that. What ivermectin does reveal is that anti-vaxxers aren't against Big Pharma, they're against the official story. Now, in the episode, Dr. Peter McCullough mentions Bill Gates, and while he never directly states that mass vaccinations is a plot for Operation Depopulation, he does refer to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is the poster boy for the anti-vaccine movement. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the founder of the Children Health Defense, an anti-vaccine organization that has spread a variety of conspiracy theories, from vaccines cause autism, to chemtrail conspiracy theories, and to 5G, to, you guessed it, Operation Depopulation. And the reason I bring this up is because this was probably the biggest red flag for me. The fact that Dr. Peter McCullough uses Robert F. Kennedy indicates that his talking points are really based on a conspiratorial framework that is designed to profit on the fears of his audience. Remember, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the same person that believes that 5G was the cause of this pandemic early on. So I ask you as a listener, do you think that anyone that refers to him as a reliable source knows exactly what they're talking about? By the way, I'll leave a link to the 5G episode I did a couple of months back debunking this conspiracy theory, so definitely check it out if you haven't already. Another talking point that Dr. Peter McCullough tries to sell in his interview with Joe Rogan was when he stated that the scientific consensus was under the influence of mass formulation psychosis. Interestingly enough, he never offers any evidence for this phenomenon other than just making the claim. He just pulled it out of his ass, and of course, the conspiratorially inclined bought it. So let's talk about what the scientific consensus is. In short, the body of the scientific consensus is an agreement of experts and studies with methodologies that are transparent to replicate and that arrive to a similar or same conclusion. Let's revisit the mechanic example we were describing earlier. How would we as an outsider in the knowledge of mechanics be confident that the information provided was reliable and valid? One thing we can do is get a second and third opinion. And if those expert opinions concluded that the problem with your car was the oil, we would be confident that the information is supported by the consensus of experts. But what if those in the second and third opinion, the other two mechanics, mention that the problem isn't the oil, it's the commutator? Well then, chances are that the problem with your engine isn't the transmission or oil, but rather the commutator. Now, I am aware that this is a simplified version of the scientific consensus, but this builds a more clear example of the foundation of the scientific consensus, of the scientific knowledge. Because the people that constitute the scientific consensus is not your cousin who has access to the internet, didn't finish high school, considers Alex Jones an intellectual thinker, and started their own podcast. The scientific consensus are experts in the field of immunology, virology, astrophysics, psychology, mental health, and environmental science, and other fields. Professions that require hours of academic training compared to the 30-second clips your boy saw on Instagram claiming that vaccines will make your baby gay. And of course, there will always be that one expert that will attempt to villainize the entire scientific community. But remember that the scientific consensus is not just one person. It is a community of experts and professionals that are regular people trying to help our community become a better place. One of the techniques that many conspiracy theorists often use to paint the scientific consensus as recipients of Big Pharma checks is dehumanization. Now, this is easy to convey to the conspiratorially inclined because in doing so, it creates a sinister image about many current and future scientists. But the reality is that undergraduate and graduate students in the field of STEM and in social science are regular people who have scratched and clawed for their education. The idea that the Illuminati has somehow infiltrated all of the sciences and has indoctrinated students in the way of Satanism, like if we wouldn't know if something sinister was going on, is fucking hilarious. Another point that I wanted to bring up was that the $1 million debate that has been proposed from the anti-vaxxers, I forgot the actual amount, to be honest, but at a certain point in the episode, Dr. Peter McCullough states that someone had offered to pay any pro-vaxxer a certain amount just to debate the other side. Now, while I would enjoy seeing that debate, in reality, regardless of the outcome of that proposition, in the end, it would be the anti-vaxxers that would benefit from this engagement. And I'll tell you why. This proposition benefits the anti-vaxxers because it presents a false balance to the audience. In a social debate, it is implied that both sides of any perspective hold the same amount of evidence. But the reality is that in science, this isn't true. I'll give you a good example. Climate change. It is known that 97% of environmental scientists are in agreement that fossil fuels negatively impact global warming. Regardless of that, Fox News will often invite scientists that make up the 3% that disagree with the other 97% and have one scientist from each percentage defend their position, making it appear that the issue of climate change is a heavily disputed issue when in reality, it's the 97% of experts versus the 3%. Imagine if I invited a flat earth scientist, which they exist, and an astronaut and told them to debate their point. And by the end, I concluded that I'll let the audience decide. Like, no, we know for a fact that the Earth is not flat. This illusion that both sides are equivalent is absurd and is the same technique that anti-vaxxers like to use when overinflating their position. Again, if 97% of experts are in agreement on a topic, you can bet that those 97% of scientists know what the fuck they're doing. The next claim I wanted to address was that the people that were infected with COVID-19 can no longer become reinfected and that immunity from COVID-19 is permanent. Like many of the statements Dr. Peter McCullough has made, this was also a lie. The CDC has confirmed cases of people with reinfections, and as a matter of fact, in the episode, Joe Rogan challenges him on this talking point. On the podcast, Joe Rogan shares a story about how one of his friends who got infected recovered and in 6 months or so got infected again. I found this interesting because this anecdotal story essentially breaks down Dr. Peter McCullough's talking point about reinfection and permanent immunity. But instead of processing the information, Dr. McCullough straight up just denies his friend's experience and asserts that Joe Rogan's friend was never reinfected. It's just that the same virus that got him the first time got him again the second time. Like what? That doesn't even make sense at face value. Let us address one more claim before we end this episode, and this is regards to the VARS. Now, in my episode titled The Defense Mechanism of the Anti-Vaxxer, we actually covered this system. Recall that in that episode, we learned that the VARS is not a database of confirmed cases of vaccine injuries or deaths. It's a self-reporting system created by the CDC to bring awareness of potential harm from vaccines. And the creator of VARS actually states this on their website. It reads the following. VARS is a passive reporting system, meaning it relies on individuals to send in reports of their experience to CDC and FDA. VARS is not designed to determine if a vaccine caused a health problem, but is especially useful in detecting unusual and unexpected patterns of adverse events reporting that might indicate a possible safety problem with a vaccine. This way, VARS can provide CDC and FDA with valuable information that additional work and evaluation is necessary to further assess a possible safety concern. Now, not only is the VARS not a database for confirmed deaths of vaccines, it's actually not even that reliable. And that's because, as mentioned, it is a self-reporting system. A while back, someone decided to submit a report about an adverse effect that they had experienced with the vaccine. After completing the application, they had submitted it and it became a part of the public record. End of story, right? Well, I forgot to mention that when the person submitted their report through VARS, they did it under the name The Incredible Hulk. The giant green guy that helped fight Thanos in Endgame from the MCU? Yeah, someone submitted a report under that name and the VARS accepted it as reliable information. And now that report is a part of the 18,000 deaths that Dr. Peter McCullough often cites to bring legitimacy to his claim that vaccines are dangerous. And the fact that a doctor is unable to cite VARS properly as a self-reporting system and not a database illustrates that Dr. Peter McCullough is not an expert in immunology, virology, or VARS. Simply put, Dr. Peter McCullough is a fraud. And by the way, if the CDC was literally suppressing information about vaccine injuries and is plotting the depopulation of the world, why would the CDC make a reporting system public? What kind of sinister establishment would leave an open evidence like that for a conspiracy theorist to access? Like, from a conspiracy theorist perspective, that's a shitty conspiracy theory, because conspiracy theory perpetrators are supposed to be secretive about their plans. But here they are providing a reporting system that you can access with Google. I'm just saying, if the CDC is hiding something, they're doing a shitty ass job about it. So if there's anything that I hope you got from today's episode, is that Dr. Peter McCullough is no expert in vaccines. He is a conspiracy theory distributor that relies on his audience to have an insufficient understanding on vaccines and a mindset that is inclined to conspiratorial ideologies. His main objective isn't to treat patients, but to gain a following similar to Alex Jones that will bring him financial success and an image of superiority from the conspiratorial community. What's worse is that people like Joe Rogan have become victims of their own conspiratorial biases. And what saddens me is that Joe Rogan has access to anyone and can bring reliable experts like Dr. Andrea Love, an immunologist, and Dr. Jessa Steyer, a public health scientist and hosts of the Unbiased Science podcast. Instead, he willingly bubbles himself in his own conspiratorial worldview and allows the seeds of misinformation to grow on his massive platform. I want to thank you today for listening to today's episode. And as always, question everything with logic.